From Hollidaysburg to Uniontown, Warminster to Whitehall, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the decline of humility and the death of wisdom. Are they the source of modern society's problems and the key to the solutions? William Tully has written a book on the subject, and he is here to discuss. The Hidden History Center in York, Pennsylvania, archives numerous historical books and papers that otherwise would be lost to historians. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Marilyn Tenenhoff of the center in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And the fight over the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, continues in Harrisburg. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Bill Tully in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The Centers for Disease Control has once again changed its mask guidelines, creating confusion and hindering vaccine efforts by negating one of the key benefits of getting vaccinated, which is the need to mask up. Governor Tumble, however, is not sending a mixed message. The governor this past week said he has no plans to reinstate any mask mandates, nor does he plan to mandate the vaccine. The governor said he was not taking the surge of the new variant lightly, but he said, quote, "Our strategy here in Pennsylvania has been the vaccine, and that has worked." Fatal drug overdoses shot up by 14% in Pennsylvania in 2020, with 5,063 people having died by overdose. The rate of increase was the highest among blacks and Hispanics, and there was a 126% increase in overdose deaths by children under the age of 14. Pennsylvania has been fighting an opioid epidemic and had been making some progress until the COVID-19 pandemic hit. If you have not yet converted your driver's license to one that is real ID, you now have a bit more time. PennDOT has pushed back the deadline for getting a real ID to May of 2020. Although real ID is not required, and drivers can still obtain and use a regular driver's license, a real ID will be needed for, among other purposes, to get on an airplane for a domestic flight, enter a military base, or a federal building. Yet another Democratic lawmaker has resigned from the Pennsylvania legislature amid corruption charges. The Pennsylvania Attorney General has filed a number of charges against former state representative Margot Davidson of Delaware County, stemming from alleged abuse of her legislative expense account by taking reimbursement for overnight expenses on nights she was not in Harrisburg. She is also charged with hindering the investigation. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Humility and wisdom. They are the character traits that have occupied the minds of philosophers for thousands of years. Now, William Tully has written a book on why those traits are important to finding the solutions to our current-day problems. Bill has a unique perspective as a judge of the Court of Common Pleas in Dauphin County, and his experience led him to write The Decline of Humility and the Death of Wisdom. Judge, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Bill, before we get into the specific items that are included in the book, tell us what made you want to sit down and write a book on the decline of humility and the death of wisdom?
Well, that was probably a culmination of a decent amount of time pondering what the heck is going on with society, obviously observing just the level of acrimony and rudeness. I came up with the theory that the virtue of humility had all but vanished in popular culture. And when I expanded that and did some research, and I'm a historian by education, mm-hmm. Saw the correlation between humility and wisdom, and then did a lot of research as to the ancient writings and many of the great philosophers across the globe all came to that same conclusion that humility indeed is a prime virtue and that wisdom is the fruit of a humble life well lived. And that was the genesis. And then during the pandemic lockdown, it was time for me to actually put pen to paper and finish the product.
Talk a little bit more about humility. It doesn't appear to be a virtue that's really predominant in our society these days. It seems like everybody from politicians to media to Facebook celebrities like to promote themselves. Have we lost our sense of humility in this country?
It's not just this country. I think it's the Western civilization has moved away from humility. The Eastern spiritualists still all maintain that important virtue. I think it started with the Western philosophers, starting with Hume and Kant, that basically saw humility as not a virtue but a vice, basically synonymous with weakness. Mm-hmm. And that basically carried on through Nietzsche and ultimately Karl Marx, where essentially humility was something to be looked down upon. And it's been replaced culturally with arrogance, where it's fine to inflict your will on someone else. And there's no longer a belief that all human life is virtuous, that they basically said that a will of one person or superior people on others. Those are the sort of things that really were most troubling with where Western philosophy went. Yet all your world religion traditions as well as your spiritualists in the East have all maintained that humility still is a prime virtue. And I guess we could just look at the results of it. The fruits of the development have not been good. Humility allows you to learn. By acknowledging that you don't know something gives you the motivation to learn something. And frankly, we should forever be in that mode of looking to learn. As soon as you believe you know it all, you're in for a tumble. And as soon as you think that you're humble, you've probably lost your humility. It's a goal that you forever seek. It's a discipline. It's a state of mind more than anything else.
We have at our fingertips now the ability to get more facts, to get more information than at any time in human history. So with that, why is it that it seems like even though we have the ability to get facts and information, wisdom seems to be a rare commodity?
Well, wisdom is actually that culmination of all that knowledge that one is able to access or accumulate, combining it with experience, which gives you the perspective. All right. That's really what's missing in society today. A lot of people lose the perspective. They're too busy staring at a tree and they don't see the forest around it. Wisdom is that ability to see where things fit in the larger picture. And one of the real neat correlations is that although humility is essential for wisdom, wisdom actually reaffirms the humility. It's through wisdom you learn how much you don't really know, mm-hmm. and that the need to learn continues until you die. And that's not what you hear in the public culture. It's everyone seems to know everything, and simply accessing knowledge doesn't necessarily give you wisdom.
We also have our society moving, whether folks realize it or not or understand it or not, more in a socialistic and Marxist direction. And you did mention Karl Marx in your previous answer. To what degree do you see this lack of humility, lack of wisdom sort of feeding into Western society going more in a Marxist direction?
I think when you start to lose sight of the value of the individual human being, where you can group people and discard some and raise others, that's the arrogance of Marx's theories. Essentially, you were able to exterminate an entire class in order to advance the revolution. That school of thought is frightening, and it wasn't just with Marx and Lenin in the Soviet Union. It was the socialist movement in Germany that was the Nationalist Socialist Party. Again, thinking that some people are expendable and can be exterminated, that is a school of thought that is foreign to anyone that really views life in a proper perspective. And then you can also see it with Mao in China. The biggest problem, I guess, historically is just the number of millions of people that have suffered at the hand of the arrogance that comes with that kind of thinking, that I know what's right and you either will accept my my will, or you can be canceled or exterminated or whatever the case may be.
We are talking with William Tully. Bill is the author of The Decline of Humility and the Death of Wisdom, a new book out. And Bill, when you talk about how you have these mass exterminations that have occurred throughout history, you just listed a number of them. We also seem to be in a period of time where violence is growing. Talk a little bit about how the decline of humility and the lack of wisdom is leading to more violence in our society. And in your day job as a judge, I'm sure you see this on a daily basis.
Well, one of the chapters in the book is actually addressing the issue of violence. And in many cases, for someone to commit a violent act on someone else, it is an arrogance. I mean, it's a disregard of the value of someone else's life and the fact that you have what you think to be a right or justification to commit violence on others is obviously a systemic problem right now. I mean, I see it from the bench in criminal court. Oftentimes, it's a certain arrogance and a complete lack of appreciation for the value of human life. I can't tell you how many cases that just left me floored just with the level of violence and the lack of remorse and simply a disregard for that value. And then one case in particular was two defendants in a homicide, and it was a senseless killing. I think the victim was struck with 11 bullets. But I got to see three families destroyed. The victim's family, obviously destroyed by the crime, and then two other families watching very young adults, 18 and 19, getting life imprisonment sentences. Essentially, three lost lives for an act that, although it was solved, no one really had the why. In other words, there was never an explanation as to what would have justified cold-blooded, you know, killing in the street. That's the sort of thing that just kind of floors you.
Mm. You mentioned that you ended up writing this book during the COVID pandemic and the lockdown, gave you the time to do it. One of your chapters does talk about drug addiction, and that's something, Bill, that really hasn't gotten the coverage I think it deserves. What has happened to the numbers of folks who are dying or suffering serious consequences because of drug addiction? Talk a bit about that.
Well, I think one of the most impactful occasions that I was able to experience was being invited to a regional meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as what they call an official observer. In other words, someone in the system or the recovery system that comes in to observe what they have to offer. It was kind of amazing to me because I was expecting to encounter a bunch of old grumpy people miserably getting by without using alcohol. And I encountered a very diverse group of very spiritually energized individuals that actually drew energy from their recovery and then reinvested that energy in helping others. And then learning about the 12 steps, it kind of connected that humility was at the base of recovery. Watching in court, especially treatment court, I do veterans court, which is a treatment court for people with a lot of times psychological, chemical dependent, or post-traumatic stress disorder issues, oftentimes a combination of all of them, watching the value of humility and keeping them focused on their recovery versus the arrogance that lets them convince themselves that, oh, I got this figured out. I can control this. And they relapse out of arrogance. If they would have stuck with the humility, they would have stayed and realized they have to work those 12 steps almost eternally.
Almost eternally. Well, there's so much more we could talk about on this, but I will remind folks the title of the book is The Decline of Humility and the Death of Wisdom. Bill Tully, William Tully is the author. And Bill, where can folks get a copy of this? Hopefully we've just given them a small snapshot of what the book has. But if folks would like to learn more, would like to read the book, where can they get it?
Well, it's readily available on Amazon.com. All you have to do is enter Decline of Humility. It'll pop up, both soft copy, hard copy, and electronic. And We're in the process of coming up with an audiobook as well. Mm. It's also available through the websites at Borders and Barnes & Noble. I don't believe they've stocked books. I think until the pandemic eases and they're able to do traditional book signings and things like that, it's harder to get them into the actual bookstores.
The Decline of Humility and the Death of Wisdom. We have been talking with its author, William Tully. Bill, thank you for being here.
Loman, absolute pleasure.
The Hidden History Center in York, Pennsylvania, archives a wide array of papers and books that otherwise would be lost to historians. To learn more, Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Marilyn Tenenhoff, Executive Director of the Center, in this Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Marilyn, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio Journal.
Happy to be here.
Marilyn, share with our listeners, if you would, what has been the inspiration to produce the Hidden History Center in York, Pennsylvania?
The Hidden History Center originally was the idea of our founder, John Judge, who originally actually wanted to have a full-blown museum in Washington, D.C., called the Museum of Hidden History. And when he passed away, I scaled it back because I didn't have that kind of resources, and I renamed it and re-envisioned it as the Hidden History Center. But basically, it includes the work of our founder, John Judge, who died in April of 2014. But actually, the Museum of Hidden History and the Hidden History Center idea and incorporation and nonprofit status go back to about 2011.
Tell us a little bit about John. Who was he, and what did he see as his purpose in life?
He would call himself a truth seeker or an alternate historian. Some people would call him a conspiracy theorist, but he didn't particularly like that term. He felt that he was looking for untold truth, undiscovered information. He dedicated his life to these research projects, including the famous assassinations of JFK and RFK and MLK, also to 9/11, and a lot of things about what the U.S. government did, such as its covert actions around the world. He has all kinds of information on YouTube where he's given speeches, and he always appeared at conferences and lectures and that sort of thing during his life, promoting these ideas.
So he was looking for the truth, which projects that we weren't being told the truth about these things. Why did he feel that way? Why did he feel that the truth was being kept from us?
You'd have to go back to his background a little. Both of his parents worked for the Pentagon. And when he was even a very little boy, he would go to like Christmas parties, that sort of thing, and he would hear the people, government officials, talking about the real truth versus what the public was being told. And he learned at a very young age that there were basically two governments, I guess you could say, the one we knew about and the one behind that that we didn't know so much about. And some of it was not intentional hiding. Some of it was just that information was not, it just wasn't taught in schools or well-known. So part of our motto is that we have information not taught in schools.
What do you think would most surprise our listeners about your organization and Mr. Judge?
One of the theories that is most surprising seems to be his theory about Jonestown and Jim Jones and all the people who committed suicide there. John did an extensive bunch of research and wrote articles to the effect that there was not a suicide there, that those people were murdered. And I think that's not known very well, and probably most people would either be surprised or just plain wouldn't believe it.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Marilyn Tenenhoff, the Executive Director of the Hidden History Center in York, Pennsylvania. Marilyn, you mentioned a couple of the other conspiracy kinds of projects that he went after, the one about the World Trade Center. Talk a little bit about that one.
Now, John had a different opinion about that. There's a group of 9/11 researchers who call themselves the 9/11 truthers, who believe that the buildings might have been brought down by controlled demolition or some such thing. John did not believe that. He had a friend that was on one of the planes that hit the Pentagon, so he knew that the plane really did hit the Pentagon, and he felt that this exploration of it being like a government conspiracy was actually hiding more important and more interesting things and keeping us from looking at them, such as why the hijackers were mostly Saudi Arabian. They weren't from Iraq or Afghanistan. I think that's probably one of the things that's a little different. He started an organization called 9/11 Citizens Watch, which represented the families of people who were killed on 9/11. And John and the families went to all the hearings that the government had and asked questions and brought out information that wasn't being covered. So he was not of the truther school, but he definitely wanted to find out more about what was going on and felt that we didn't know everything yet.
That's a very interesting background. If people were to come and visit your center, what should they expect?
Well, right now they should expect a lot of boxes. When John passed away, I moved his entire collection, and a bunch of his friends helped me, moved his entire collection out of this huge house in Washington, D.C., to a facility here in York, Pennsylvania, which would be near my house. And we are, I think there are about 800 boxes, all carefully labeled. And we are in the process of opening these boxes one at a time, going through all the papers and books that are in them, and cataloging them.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Marilyn Tenenhoff, the executive director of the Hidden History Center in York, Pennsylvania. Marilyn, if somebody would like more information on how to access you, maybe they want to volunteer or contribute contributions, how can they find you?
We have a donate button on hiddenhistorycenter.org on our website.
Marilyn, this has been very interesting. Thank you very much for what you're doing and for being a guest on the program.
Governor Tom Wolf is attempting to implement the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGGI, by regulatory fiat. Here to examine the ramifications of both the process and the program is Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, with this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
The Pennsylvania General Assembly may be in recess until September, but the fight over whether or not Pennsylvania should join the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGGI, a multi-state cap-and-trade consortium that limits carbon dioxide emissions from power plants and sells allowances to emit carbon dioxide at quarterly auctions, continues on several fronts. A Department of Environmental Protection regulation authorizing the Commonwealth to join REGGI was approved by the Environmental Quality Board earlier this month. Governor Tom Wolf has consistently claimed that he has the authority to have Pennsylvania join REGGI via the regulatory process rather than by a legislative vote. The regulation will be considered this fall by the Pennsylvania Independent Regulatory Review Commission, or IRC. In advance of IRC's consideration of the REGGI regulation, the House Environmental Resources and Energy Committee, chaired by Representative Daryl Metcalf of Butler County, has just voted to send IRC a letter disapproving the regulation. The purpose of sending the letter of disapproval to IRC is procedural. The letter must be sent to IRC so that if they adopt the regulation, the process of starting a joint resolution to oppose implementation of the regulation can begin. And once that joint resolution is adopted by both chambers, it will likely be vetoed by the governor. But Chairman Metcalf believes a veto override is possible in both chambers. Efforts to require legislative approval of any attempt to join REGGI continue in both the State House and State Senate. These bills would provide a process for legislative approval before a carbon tax could be imposed or before Pennsylvania could enter into a binding multi-state compact that has tax implications. During debate over both bills, numerous legislators argued that the governor does not have the authority to enter Pennsylvania into REGGI via regulation, and further stated that all of the other Reggie states joined the compact by a legislative vote. To date, the Senate has passed out their version of the bill with an incredible show of bipartisan support, and the House bill, while out of committee, awaits full consideration by the House. Yet, an identical bill was vetoed by the governor during the last legislative session in 2019 and 2020, and either of the bills currently under consideration will meet the same fate. A veto override is possible. It failed in the House by just half a dozen votes last session. Without question, some of those members can be moved through sustained pressure. You know, proponents of Reggie continue to argue that it has been a success at reducing greenhouse gas emissions in its current member states, and that the revenue generated by the sale of allowances will allow PA to invest in clean energy projects that will create jobs. But those proponents continually and conveniently leave out the fact that Pennsylvania, thanks in large part to the development of the Commonwealth's natural gas industry, has already been reducing its carbon dioxide emissions at a greater rate than Reggie states have been able to accomplish. They also do not address the fact that most, if not all, of the proceeds from these allowances will be funneled to politically preferred and chosen projects of dubious economic value. They also fail to recognize that Pennsylvania would be the only major energy-producing state in Reggie if it were to join, and that many of the energy jobs that the Commonwealth has created will instead move to non-Reggie states like Ohio and West Virginia. Most importantly, Reggie represents a tax not only on Pennsylvania energy producers, but also on every Pennsylvania family and business that consumes energy and creates jobs. Joining Reggie would apply the brakes to our economic growth at the very moment this Commonwealth needs to hit the job and wealth creation accelerator, and hard. While we can't expect legislative action until the Senate and House return in late September, be on the lookout for information about the September 1st IRC meeting, where the DEP regulation will be considered. Over the coming weeks, please visit AmericansForProsperity.iVolunteers.com. Abundant, affordable, and reliable energy is the key driver of our prosperity and security. Let's do our part in ensuring Reggie is defeated in our Commonwealth. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WGET-AM and WGTY-FM in Gettysburg, along with WVMM-FM in Grantham, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.